It seems we only very recently gave you the questions that we possibly should have transmitted to you yesterday, but thank you for agreeing to deal with them at short notice in any event. So just to remind those of you that we discussed them yesterday, there were three questions we talked about. I think they may even be up on the slides here, so if we could move to the next slide. And here are some thoughts to aid the discussion, Fadi. So over to you. You may want to make some other remarks as well. Let me hand over to you.
Thank you. Thank you for welcoming me back to the GNSO, and bon appétit. Sorry that I'm interrupting your lunch, but we'll make this hopefully fun and interactive. Look, there are many things I could have done better or done differently. There's no question. And while I'm happy to answer the question, and I'll try to point out a few things, some of them very obvious, some of them maybe just deeper into what I did as in the last 3 years, I must tell you that what would make the next CEO do less mistakes and be more effective would be a very, very good preparation and orientation for this person as they come into this job. Now, this is not to take a dig at anyone or my board who's coming in a few minutes here that they could have done better, but the reality is, of course, ICANN has changed and the context in which we work has changed, so there was a lot of change. Having said that, spending about 7 minutes with the prior CEO before I took this job is not something I would recommend for the next person. This is a very complex job and a very, very layered role, and I had no orientation to speak of, really. And therefore, the poor soul that will come and do my job, if he or she is not someone who knows this community, then they'd better have a lot of orientation. Because I made many, many mistakes along the way because I really didn't understand many things. And because my nature is to keep going, because my nature is as a starter, as someone who's just not going to sit and wait till I understand everything before I move, which may be not the right kind of CEO for the future. So I'm a starter. I get things going. So I didn't stop till I understood everything. And in the road, I hit many walls and I fell, but I stood up again and continued. So if we can reduce the number of these for the next person, then I think we all benefit a lot, especially the community. So yesterday in my private session with the board to brief them on the succession plan, I not only begged them, but I told them, please, let's take the time to make enough overlap between myself and the next person. And given the timing, it may be difficult, so I committed to them that if after I leave in March, there is a need for me to dedicate some of my time for a number of months just as a service to the community and to you all, to continue just making sure this person understands everything, that I'm happy to do it to the extent I can be helpful. I made many mistakes along the way. 3 is a very, very conservative number. Let me start with the TMCH, right? I mean, I meant well, I intended well, but I broke every process in the system when I did it. So I didn't know, and I really didn't realize that I did till later. Another big mistake I did is that I didn't understand that these are really 3 jobs. It's not 1 job. And when I didn't understand there are 3 jobs, it took me a while to get all 3 jobs right. I am the CEO of an organization that today is very different from what it said. You know, we spend $150 million a year. That's huge. When I came, it was 63. 65. So this is a huge spend, 350 people very shortly here in a couple of months in 30 locations around the world. Very complex to manage that. And I'm not a real CEO. I mean, in the sense that I've been CEO since I'm 28. You come in, you look at the issue, you make decisions. That's not... So the nomenclature CEO is the worst thing you could give the next person, but I'm sure you will. But I'm not a CEO. And so it took me a while to realize I actually am not a CEO. And that's difficult to get and to appreciate. It's, you know, there are types of CEOs, and this is a servant CEO job. And until you get that, you keep hitting walls because you don't understand. The second job I have is to really, whether I liked or not, I became a politician. I had to go visit with people I've never met with. But yet I'm a politician without a flag. You know, I'm a politician without armies. I show up often. I got strip searched in Canada before I went to meet the minister. So I'm not a regular politician. I'm not a country representative. But yet I have to go deal with ministers and presidents. And so it's a very strange role in many ways. And so I'm a politician. I'm a political appointee in many ways. And the politics of the internet are thick and heavy right now. And everybody wants ICANN to carry a burden that is not really ours. The politicians want us to carry burdens that are not ours. And the third job I have is, of course, I'm a community facilitator. And this is the best place I've learned to do that is in my church, right, where you have to learn to bring people together and to see things together. And these are jobs that require very different human beings, very different skilled people. The CEO, servant, is very different from the political appointee, very different from the community facilitator. And these are three very different jobs. And I'm not good at all three of them. The thing I was good at is that I embraced them and I went at them in the most energy I can and I hit all the walls across three of them and I made many mistakes along the way. The thickest, biggest mistake I regret was that it took me a long time to understand that my third job, which I just listed, should have been my first role. It took me a while. I must tell you, some of you don't know all the stories, but one day, if I ever have the time, because I don't think I will, but I want to remember the moments where I learned certain things. And the moment I learned the community role should have been my first role, took a major clash with you leading up to Istanbul, as you remember, where I was insisting on certain things about accountability track versus the rest of the tracks. And we were really, all of us, fighting hard. And my board chairman took me out of this and told me, you are missing the point about what the community is looking for here. And it was a very hard moment with Steve, very, very difficult moment. And I think since then, I've understood things I didn't, and I stepped back and I embraced this role. Who was with me at the SOACSG Rallo dinner a few days ago? Some of you, Jonathan, right? Compared to our dinner a year and a half ago in Singapore, where we almost killed each other, this was a different time and a different place because we stepped back and we understood how to work with each other. I had to do this. This is not about you. This is about me. So I've learned a lot, and I hope I can take the time. I told my performance review board committee, they reviewed me today to decide if they'll pay me my bonus for this past period. I told them that I finally, for the first time, feel like I get this job, and I'm leaving. But it took me 3 years. I finally get all the parts of this job. It's a very complex job, but it's a beautiful job. It is a fantastic job. It is better than any job I've ever had or will ever have, I think. It is amazing. Lucky is the person who will take my place because it's fun. It's actually incredible fun and incredible. It's an intellectual, spiritual, in every way, it's an amazing role to be ICANN CEO. So lucky is the person who will take it, and I hope you will all contribute in finding a person who will serve you well from day one, not like me, who from day one will arrive understanding all the parts of this and put their heart and their mind and their soul and their energy without stopping to serve this community. I will do my part to help. I was asked if I want to be on the search committee for my replacement. I, of course, said no. It's not appropriate for me to be on the search committee, but I will support the search committee and I will support you till the last day I'm here. I am committed to this. The GNSO Council...
Can we take some questions? Oh,
sure. Are there questions about my mistakes?
Well, Bafadi, thank you for that very characteristic candor and openness. I think it reminds me of something like when you come to sell your house and all those things that have been bothering you, you finally manage to fix up and you end up selling a fixed-up house to the next person. So hopefully you're delivering a fixed-up house for the next person. But are there any questions or comments on this first bullet point? So I see a hand up from Brett and Volker. So let's hear from you in response.
Thank you. You said it was the best job you could imagine having, the best job you've ever had, and you finally figured it out. So it just begs the question, why are you leaving?
Because the next phase of ICANN requires a different person. It doesn't. Don't go rehire a Fadi. You don't need another Fadi. I was there for a purpose, for a time, and... You know, there, as I'm sure you've read, many of you, the famous Harvard Business Review article about the types of CEOs. I am a classic change agent CEO. I come in, I either build things from scratch because I'm not afraid to make mistakes and hit walls and get up again, or I transform things. ICANN doesn't need this now. I think we came, remember, operationally when I arrived, I don't know if you all remember, we were dealing with, you know, digital archery. I mean, this is where we were operationally. We did not fully appreciate what is coming at us, what the GNSO is bringing here. People, issues at ICANN were still very, very foundational. And so I came to build every part of ICANN, and the last part I just announced was the technical part of ICANN, which had been traditionally weak. Now we strengthened it, and it's now... So the framework and the journey for ICANN to become an institution that is able to deal with the growth it's facing is in place. Now what you need is a different person. You've built a home, I'm sure, Brett, I've built a home, and you know that different teams come at different times to finish that house. This was the framing team. We framed the house. It's standing. And it's solid. It's a solid house. Now we need people to come and finish. And it's a different CEO. I'm not that kind of CEO. So in all honesty, I had to face that and say, will I serve ICANN best by staying or by leaving? I think by leaving, but by making sure that the person coming to finish the house with you is someone who knows all the things I learned, hopefully on day one, or at least on month one, or on year one, not 3 years in, to understand, for example, the complexities of dealing with our board. Because our board, just like I'm mistakenly called a CEO, our board is not a board. It is not a board. It is a board part of the time, when it makes decisions like a board of directors. But there is another aspect to our board that is closer to my father-in-law's tribal council in the villages of Lebanon. Our board is a bit of a tribal council as well, and it functions like a tribal council. And our board is also very differently a political body in many ways. We need to embrace that. It took me a long time to understand that, so I keep coming up to the board meeting prepared like I'm dealing with my IBM board. And it doesn't function this way, right? So all this understanding that took me a while and made me make a lot of mistakes, my hope is to hand, not a guidebook, but to actually take the time. And finally, I want to say something very important, very important. We built a lot of trust capital for ICANN. We're not quite there. There's a lot more trust to be built. But we did build a lot of trust capital. That trust capital must be transferred from a person to ICANN. And not just to the new leader, to the institution. And so I'm spending the last 10 months of my work making sure that the depth of the ICANN team, the depth of the ICANN community, the depth of the board is exposed to all the channels of work I've had, and there are many of them. So I'm going to do that to the best of my ability. So when I leave, I don't take away anything. Quite the opposite, I hopefully leave more than I've taken.
Thanks, which to some extent speaks to the third bullet. I've got James, then Marilyn, then Marilia. James.
Thanks. I thought Volker was... Did you lower your hand, Volker?
My question was already answered, so I...
Okay. Well, I think you teed it up nicely there, Jonathan. It's James speaking for the transcript. Hi, Fadi. So you mentioned that the third job you discovered was actually the hardest or the most important. How can we compress the learning cycle then for the next CEO so that... aside from chiseling that into the door above your office, how do we make sure that message is taken on board, and that person comes in with their eyes maybe a little wide open to what they're taking on and what they're getting themselves into?
Because first we need to take the time to explain this to them. First, every CEO reports to the board, so you come in. Your instinct is, what did I do in the first 3 months of my job? I spent an enormous amount of time talking to the board members. I met with them one-on-one. I spent time to understand them, to appreciate their backgrounds. I should have done this with the SOAC leaders instead in the first 3 months. Frankly, I would have avoided a lot of mistakes had I spent the time with you all, with the GNSO Council, understanding all the where the policy comes from, where this community strength comes from, who it is. So, but it's natural. If you're a CEO, you don't start with, quote-unquote, the customers or the community or whatever. You start with the board. You also start with the staff. And I think that the staff we had didn't have the depth we have today. We needed to. So I think we just need to take the time. I urge you, when the new CEO comes, take him out for a two-day retreat, or her. Take them out for a two-day retreat. Invite them to a two-day retreat. Spend 2 days with them. Chat with them. Explain to them. I will do the same with them, but you should too. And if God willing, there is time... overlap between me and the new person. I want to promise you, James, given the understanding I did with you also from day one, that I will take him or her around to each of you and explain the role you play and the importance of what you do as compared to everything else they have to deal with. And I'm hoping that after the transition, the reason I spent a chunk of my time on the road talking to politicians will go away. Because I tell my team, what will Axel Lemaire in France want to meet me about after the transition? Hopefully nothing. I mean, because right now all the focus is on the transition. So once the transition finishes, hopefully the political part of this job goes away or reduces to something staff could manage at a lower level. But right now we've had to deal with it, and I hope this passes as well, James. Did I answer you, James?
High level? I thought that was good. Thank you. And, of course, we'll help out as what we can. We have a vested interest in that process as well. So,
yeah.
Thanks, James. Thanks, Fadi. Marilyn.
Thank you. My name is Marilyn Cade. Fadi, thank you for those candid comments. I'd like to add perhaps a dimension that I think is already inherent in your thinking, but I'm going to elaborate on it. When you were very correct to point out that we were at a very different scope and scale when you joined ICANN, both in terms of our work challenges, our external challenges, our internal operational excellence challenges, and the number of staff and the number of community participants. So things have changed a lot in this 3 years. But we also have ahead of us, I want to add perhaps an additional term to your second category, because when you refer to politicians, you are referring to one part of the governmental entities. But that is not necessarily covering also the government agencies and ministries who must be involved in ICANN on an ongoing basis and who should stay involved and become even more perhaps interested and involved as ICANN continues in its path forward if fulfilling its mission. So I just wanted to draw that distinction. And to do that before I go on to say, we have a lot of new staff. And learning the lessons that you're sharing with us is something that I struggle a little bit with on how we, the community, help to bring the staff into a deeper, richer understanding of what this multi-stakeholder model is, why it is so precious, and why they have... perhaps, and we have both ways, lessons to learn in this period. And because of the transition at the top position, I think that staff challenge perhaps needs to have some attention as well to make sure that we're paying attention to it and also it's being paid attention to on the other side, because that is probably our greatest ongoing vulnerability. Do we come together on understanding and implementing this multi-stakeholder bottom-up model?
Simply to thank you, Marilyn, because you've helped me also understand that, but you're extending the issue that we have a large staff and we need to make sure they appreciate these things. So let's do some practical things. ICANN staff has 46 people that we call executive management. We're 46 people. People in that group have been assigned to that group because they either have big budget responsibilities, big people responsibilities, or frankly, just executive responsibilities. There's 46 of us. I spent half a day with them here on Wednesday. I think what we may want to do, and I'm happy to at least start with that group. I know you're thinking of the big group as well. But let's have an interaction with them. Maybe we can organize something around Dublin before I leave, where you, the community addresses these 46 people who really have the pulse of ICANN, the budget of ICANN, the responsibility of stability of the institution. I'm happy to arrange for that. So I'll take that as an action, and it will be a good dialogue, not necessarily to lecture them, but to actually share with them the facts, and I'll lead with you on that to make sure they understand this is not just the community telling them. This is me telling them too, and you joining me in that messaging. So let's take the opportunity to do that. Okay.
So, not the first time. Thank you, Marilyn Fadi. I've got two other questions. I think then we're probably out of time, and it's helpful that we've effectively touched on the succession planning via your descriptions of senior staff team and so on. I guess we might struggle with the second bullet point, although in some ways it wouldn't be a bad idea if we took that one over into our meeting with the board, since it partly impacts them. Marilia, go ahead.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. This is Marilia Maciel speaking. Actually, I have two quick questions for Fadi. The first of them is I would like to turn this question around and ask you, what do you think are your main positive legacies as a CEO of ICANN? And the second question is, you talked about operational challenges and how they require a different CEO, but what about the political challenges that ICANN faces today? You mentioned an increased trust, and I agree with you, and ICANN occupies today a different place, I think, in the ecosystem, a respected place, a place of influence, and whether we agree or not with particular decisions that were made, I think that this place is an asset for the organization. And how do you feel that the political challenges that we have ahead with the WSIS Plus 10 and the moving pieces in the global internet governance ecosystem, what are the challenges, how the next CEO could deal with them, and how do we make sure that we do not have an abrupt transition in this political aspect? Thank you.
Maria, allow me to answer your first question in Marrakesh before I leave. I think this is not the time to discuss my legacy. This is the time to get a lot done. So let's stay focused, and I you know, we'll have many times to chat between now and Marrakesh, but I'm still here, and I'm here, and I'm working very hard. Believe me, I was in China for 5 hours last week. I was in India for 17 hours last week. I'm running around doing exactly the things you expect me to do day in, day out until I leave. So As to your question on the political environment and its how fragile is ICANN in that environment, let me tell you, you compare when I arrived, September 19th was my first day as CEO in 2012, and the next week I get an invitation from Hamadoun Touré to speak at the opening of the Wicket. And the board, and I don't know who's Hamadoun, I don't know what is the ITU, and certainly what is the Wicket. And so my board comes together and they say, what are you going to do? You have an invitation from Hamadoun to speak at the Wicket. I said, well, yeah, that's great. It's an invitation, so I'm going to go. No, hold on, let's talk about this. You can't just go to the Wicket and speak. This is a complicated matter. And I'll tell you, it became so obvious to me how fragile is ICANN as an institution in this environment. We were fragile. We were constantly going into these places feeling that we have to be defensive and defend who we are. And today, we're in a different place. We're not defending ourselves against the ITU. They're trying to figure out how to be who we are today. We're not defending ourselves in major governments. We don't have China. We don't have Brazil. We don't have any of these governments questioning who we are anymore. Quite the opposite. They're all here. And I have a big surprise for you also tomorrow. There will be one more major government doing what China did back in London. So we are in a different place geopolitically. Now, as I learned in politics, unlike in business, nothing is stable. No system is stable forever. But our existential political fragility, in my opinion, as soon as the transition is done, will be changed from existential political fragility to performance political fragility. Because after the transition, everybody would have sat at the table, all these big governments, and said, okay, we're going to give ICANN a shot. We're going to give the multi-stakeholder model a shot. Now we have to perform. We're in a big fishbowl now, even bigger fishbowl. Everybody will be watching this model. And I think when we deliver the proposal to Mr. Strickling later this year, we will be in a triumphant mode. Because whether the U.S. government accepts it or not, that's up to the U.S. government. But we, the multi-stakeholder community, must finish our work, must deliver a full proposal. That will give us further stability politically. But I think we're okay. We're in a much, much better place. We're in a less defensive place. We're in a desired place. And the last thing I want to say on this issue, because you're very close to it, as part of getting our independence and clarity of purpose to these governments done, we also need to finish the remaining part, which is for them to understand what is it we don't do. Because what happened certainly in our engagement in Net Mundial and other things is that there has been a confluence a little bit as to what is it we are responsible for, what is it somebody else should be doing. And as part of finishing my work, I also plan not just to focus on the transition, but to also clarify what we don't do at ICANN. Now, to do that, you need to make sure you have other viable places where people can go away from us. I will be working on that too, so that we can, when I leave, at least from my perspective, one of the key things I'd like to make sure I would have checked is not only did we make our layer and our business legitimate and clear, but we also have made it clear what we don't do and what we shouldn't be involved in. And that's going to take some work still. 10 months to go. Let's use every day well. So, thank you. Mr. Chairman, my
next slot is with
you.
The board. We have this 5 minutes until that. So
can we spend the last 5 minutes still here before the board starts in five? Is that okay with you?
Sure.
Okay. Right. So it's yours.
So we'll deal with those last 5 minutes with two questions. These are the final two questions, coincidentally, from registrars. So we've got Volker and then Michele, and then we'll draw a line on it. Those board colleagues joining us now, please
come in, and if any colleagues around the table can make as much effort to create some space around the table so we can be joined by our colleagues.
There are seats here.
Fadi, you have set the good ship icon, so to speak, on a new course, and you've committed to showing your successor the nooks and crannies of that ship, how to steer it good and well through the course that lies ahead. What would you think are the storm clouds or reefs ahead that your successor still has to circumvent that you didn't get to tackle during your captaincy, so to speak? And the second question is with regard to your officers, your first officers, and a lot of friends and colleagues that have joined ICANN since you came aboard, who you knew before, do you expect them to stay on board or to jump ship at a certain point?
These are two big questions. On the second one, there is clearly going to be some departures. That's normal. Any CEO comes, CEO leaves, departures happen. What is more important is to make sure, as CEO, for me to actually start planning the succession in areas where I believe people may be potentially a flight risk. We did not have at ICANN succession planning as a function before I came. We now have a fully fledged succession planning function at ICANN, very similar to what I did at IBM. Of course, at IBM it was six layers deep. At the top here, we're only three deep. But we know right now, if any global leader is hit by a bus today, what we will do. And more importantly, we know if a global leader is going to leave in a year or two, who is in the succession, what is that person missing to be ready, and we have development plans for these people. So you should know that we have a steady layer of succession planning that is already on the move with development plans already in place. So if people leave, and people might leave, it's okay. It's fine. We have a deep bench, and we have a plan for that bench. And the first question you asked is a more difficult question. What is my personal prediction of difficulties ICANN will face so that if the next CEO will ask me this question, I'm sure he or she will ask, what should I be prepared for? It's very hard to answer your question before we get through the transition. But let me tell you, the most difficult reefs ahead, in my opinion, will be if the transition fails. If the transition fails, you need a different CEO than if the transition succeeds, which in itself adds a burden on the board, because they have to figure out what kind of person is needed for the next phase of ICANN, and I think it's a slightly different, possibly quite a bit different person if the transition fails from if the transition succeeds. So these, to me, this is going to be a major burden forward. The second burden this person will have is to make sure that they can dial down ICANN into its remit carefully. Now, we dialed up ICANN because there were some geopolitical things we had to do to protect ICANN. But now that these things are behind us, largely, and the transition is moving into safe territory, I hope, then that person needs to reset ICANN where it belongs. And, for example, in my opinion, I'm going to be quite direct here, ICANN, in a year's time, for example, or in a period of time, as I leave, maybe should withdraw from places like NetMundial, right? Because that's it. We went to the front. We created these things that support the multi-stakeholder model we believe in, so we tell people that's where you go solve issues, but we're coming back and settling to our remit. But these will be delicate things to be done calmly and carefully, because there was a reason we did these things that some people, frankly, don't see. But these things were done to protect ICANN. Now ICANN needs to equally remeasure its participation to protect ICANN as well. But that shift, I can't be here for it, but I will share everything I know about what led us there so that the next person can dial down carefully. If they dial down badly, or if furthermore, if they dial up, then they will hurt ICANN.
Fadi, thank you very much for your candor and comprehensive answers. That was great. So let's call that session to a close, if we can stop the recording on that session. And with that, I'll take the opportunity before we start the next session formally to welcome our board colleagues, ICANN board colleagues, into the room. We'll do our best to make you comfortable in the room, and please try and find yourselves a seat at the table, and we'll do our best to fit you in. Just letting you know, we're scheduled to start at 1. We'll start in just one or 2 minutes. We'll be with you, and we'll get the show on the road.
David, I'm sorry, but that's really hard to take seriously. You are not a tech.
I know. I saw that, and it bothered me as well.
I know.
It did bother me when I saw that as well. So.
The policy pasha.
Thank you. I should. Oh.
All right, thanks everyone for your patience. We've got a full room, and I'm sure we've got lots of people wanting to interact and discuss the topics we've got today. So can we start the recording? Good. So welcome to our ICANN board colleagues to a relatively small room, it seems, at least judging by the number of people in here. It's great to see the level of attendance at these GNSO weekend sessions. As you well know, all of you, these are sessions convened by the Council for the purposes of engaging the GNSO in the work of the Council and generally dealing with matters of importance and relevance to the GNSO. And, of course, it's given that the role of the GNSO in the ICANN structure and our delivery of ICANN of policy to the ICANN board, it's great to be able to meet with the board. We've got a set of questions that were worked on yesterday, so I apologize for the relatively short notice that you will have seen these on. Just as a sort of warm-up to those, I've got one single slide I'm going to talk to for a moment, covering recent work and just touch on a couple of key points there. So if I could have the next slide.
No.
Is anyone driving the slides? So clearly, much of our agenda and attention span and focus has been on the stewardship transition and related accountability work. I don't need to say that to you, but you do know that the GNSO communities provided significant leadership and participation in those processes and has been a very active contributor both as a chartering organization and as a supplier of resources, if you like, into the whole thing. But that hasn't stopped us doing our a lot of people talk about our day job. I'm beginning to think that the GNSO work is my day job and the CWG work is my night job. So the day job, as far as the GNSO is concerned, is working on the policy initiatives. And I know you've been briefed by staff, so we're not going to go through this laboriously. And there's a comprehensive and effective GNSO policy briefings PDF, which you will have available to you, and you've been briefed yesterday. So we're not going to take you through that in a lot of detail. But if we could briefly look at the next slide. And I think these are the things you would have been you may have seen. But these essentially are, from a GNSO perspective, some of the key milestones which we face here in BA. clearly the stewardship, dealing with the stewardship final proposal, and that's one of a number of motions on the table for us for the GNSO meeting, council meeting on Wednesday. We also have a comprehensive piece of work, which I really want to draw your attention to, because this comes out of some significant issues that arose out of the new GTLD program and all of the issues that many of us faced on policy implementation, the interaction between the two, how those are sequenced or managed together. And we have a really good piece of work that's been led by a group of four, really two experienced and well-known chairs, plus two vice chairs who I think to some extent have been mentored by those two. So we've been doing some work in terms of bringing some good new people on board, and which is great to see, and also doing this work on policy implementation. And in a way, that kind of seeds the discussion we'll have later, because one of the ongoing concerns, as you know, has been the interrelationship between where policy is correctly undertaken and implemented in the ICANN model, and how and when that the boundaries cross, perhaps inappropriately, in the different areas. So that's something we want to touch on our discussion with you, but I'd like you to be aware of the good work that's done on the policy implementation working group. There's a final report on the translation and transliteration policy and the PDP that's gone on in that. There's a precursor to formal policy work on new GTLDs, on subsequent rounds of new GTLDs. In order to, I mean, typically, what sets the scene for a piece of policy work is the creation of an issue report. And prior to handing off to staff to create an issue report, the GNSO felt it was our responsibility to do some background work and enter into some substantial discussions and identify the issues in and around what might be policy issues relating to subsequent rounds. As you know, under item 5, a critical area for us going over the recent past and looking forward has to be to have an effective working relationship with the GAC outside of the formal constructs of the ICANN model. And this whole issue of, which is another thing that came significantly out of the new GTLD program, this whole sort of clashing between GAC advice and GNSO policy and trying to find some ways through and around and how we might better deal with that. One element of that is clearly our GAC-GNSO consultation group, and the first product of that, if you'll forgive me referring to a person and a role as a product, was the creation of the GNSO liaison to the GAC. Mason Cole, who's here with us, has spent the last year working in that, but in many ways that's been a coming up to speed year, and I'm pleased to say that that's been extended for another year, and so that is a motion on the table to deal with that. And then, as you know, there's also some work. There was a proposal to initiate a cross-community working group. We've taken a small step back from that and are going to go into some intensive discussions, both through the facilitated high-intensity meeting on Monday, but also a GNSO-convened workshop session at which Steve and myself will both be present to start to talk in more detail, so that any work, any related work that gets done on new GTLD auction proceeds is done on the foundation of a chewed over and thought through set of issues, so that we don't launch straight into the chartering of a cross-community working group, but we've had an informed discussion to set that off. So that's really the lie of the land from our point of view, and I thought it would be useful to do that. Now, let me pause for a moment here, because if any of these six issues on the back of your briefing, but I mean, for example, that the chairs of the policy implementation working group are probably here. I'm here in my capacity as CWC stewardship proposal chair. If there's anything that you'd like to interact, rather than us just throwing our next set of questions at you, if there's anything you'd like to comment on or discuss in these areas, feel free to do so, but not compelled to do so. Okay, you're clearly not compelled to do so. Wonderful. So you've obviously been well briefed, and that was just a little refresher. Let's move then on to the questions. But before doing so, Steve, I haven't given you the opportunity to say anything, so let me welcome you and offer you any opening remarks you'd like to make.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. On behalf of the board, it's a pleasure to be here. We look forward to these kinds of interactions. You've heard my speech on this many times. In the interest of time, let me just jump into a couple of things that I think are worth responding to things that you said. Back up, if you would, to the previous slide. You made a comment about day job and continuing on with the work in addition to the transition. This is a point that I think is very, very important, and I've tried to stress it as well. Our windshields are dominated by the transition stuff. It's all over the place. It takes up almost all of our time. And nonetheless, we have a job to continue doing. And surprisingly, after the transition, we will still have a job to do. So one of the things that, as I say, has been very much on my mind, and I've begun to speak about it, is that in addition to the intense focus and the completion of the process, which is all important, we have to keep our eye on the ball of what it is we're supposed to be doing and to make sure that that gets done and to make sure that we have a kind of a smooth transition after the transition. That is, that we don't go into postpartum blues or something and that we are able to continue. Another thought that relates to the six things that you have up here is that when the new GTLD program was launched, and it was launched after an enormous amount of deliberation, I mean, we passed a resolution in 2008 that was after several years of deliberation, and then from 2008 until we actually launched the program was more development and so forth. Nonetheless, with all of that thought ahead of time, we still didn't get to everything. We couldn't imagine all the different permutations and combinations of interactions. And so when I look at this list and I realize the set of topics that we're talking about in, say, the new GTLD program committee and in other forums, they, and step back and take a sort of holistic view, they represent the coming together of imperfectly worked out thoughts about competing things or things that looked very different that now are in front of us that we have to be sorted out. So they represent a quite natural fact of life, which is you can only see so far, and when you get down the road a little bit, then you see a little bit further. So we're now dealing with the complexities that we were not able to completely sort out ahead of time. And life is inherently messy. There are no guaranteed answers that are perfect for all of these, and so we struggle through these. And that applies to what is it policy and what is implementation, what is the board, what is the board role versus what is the GNSO and other SO and AC roles, what is the relationship between what the GAC thinks about and what the GNSO thinks about. And I don't have any bias about these things. I think we all struggle to get these things in the best order that we can, and as I say, there's a lot of rough edges about all of that. I'm delighted with the work on the issues report. I think that this is the kind of spade work that is absolutely essential so that we do try to see as far forward as we can before we go on to the next step. And then finally, with respect to, well, let me just say about the liaison to the GAC. There's another tradition, which is our close relative, siblings, essentially, in the IETF, and all of the work that went on for years and years leading up to the current structure of the IETF. And that tradition is focused first on communication without organization, and then organization seeps in afterwards. And in this environment, I have watched, there is a tendency to say, well, first we have to organize and decide who's in charge and what the structures is, and then we'll begin communicating. And that dichotomy is one that it has pros and cons, but just speaking my particular bias, I much prefer informal communication and organization around issues after we understand what they are. So I'm deeply applaud, very, very pleased that we lay out the pathways, we build the pathways for informal communication as needed, and then observe whatever proprieties we have to with respect to formal order. And then finally, as you mentioned, we're now focusing a lot of attention, I mean, you and GNSO Council and the community, and the board actually are focusing a lot of attention on the disposition of the auction proceeds. We had at the board level identified that this was going to be a major issue. We very carefully curtained off the funds and said we're going to come at this slowly and carefully. We wanted to wait until there was clarity about the rough order of magnitude so that we knew whether we're talking about a little or a medium or a huge amount of money, and be able to people would have something to focus on. And we're now at that point. There was a side discussion about whether we were too busy doing everything else, particularly with the transition, and there was some difference of opinion about whether we should try to hold off even further or not, and the answer is not. And so, as Jonathan mentioned, we have two sessions, the high-level session tomorrow afternoon, and then on Wednesday, session that Jonathan and everyone will lead off, and all leading toward what I hope is a very careful, deliberative, and substantive discussion. And it will be challenging because the first thing will happen is people will come with all sorts of different points of view, and so getting those points of view out invisible to everybody is, I think, necessary before we launch forward in saying, okay, and therefore the decisions are going to be the following. So that's kind of a lengthy introduction, I apologize, but there's a lot of very, very substantive things going on here, and they're challenging both intellectually and they're challenging emotionally, and I think it's helpful to have the longer-term perspective in front of us so that we realize we're all in this, except for Fadi, who's found a way out. We're all in this for the foreseeable future here.
Thanks, Steve. That's more than a lengthy introduction. Those are thoughtful remarks, so appreciated. Let's go on to the next slide, which will take a deep dive into a couple of issues. And what we've got here is three points that are going to each be led by a particular councillor. So under item one, which is the impact on the board of the new GTLD policy processes, I think I'm going to hand that one to you, Brian. So please go ahead, introduce yourself and the topic.
Thank you, Jonathan. My name is Brian Winterfeld. I'm with the intellectual property constituency. The issue that, or the question that I'm really bringing to the board is something that doesn't just come from the IPC, but actually comes from the community at large. We were hoping for a little more clarity on the board's decision-making process. Specifically, our question comes from sort of the growing deference that seems to be placed on the Government Advisory Committee on GTLD policy and implementation issues. Specifically, for an example, would be the release of two-letter and country territory names at the second level in new GTLDs. We've noticed that some of the processes and solutions that are being proposed by the Government Advisory Committee are potentially really outside of the purview of what specifically the GAC is supposed to be advising on, which is national laws and international treaties. We're not sure that always these solutions are really consensus advice with a capital A versus maybe a group of people who are pushing a specific agenda forward. And so we're wondering how the board takes this advice from the Government Advisory Committee, how you determine whether or not it's capital A advice, and how you deal with advice that's being given to you that's maybe small A and that maybe isn't completely rooted in national law or international treaties.
We're not going. We're not going to duck this, but I just want to observe that the form of your question could be taken as, why aren't you having that discussion with the GAC, and how do they respond to your question, rather than trying to get us sandwiched in the middle. But nonetheless, we'll take this on a bit. I understand Chris is eager to jump into this.
That's the fourth time today you've said that I was eager to speak. I'm obviously going to. I've got to stop bouncing up and down in my chair. And
I'll use another word next time.
So I'm not going to address specifically the point about the two-letter things, because I think there's currently discussions going on at the staff level. But I did want to address the point about the way that the board deals with GAC advice specifically. And I think I want to start by just pushing back a little on the characterization of paying more deference. I think if you if you examine the way that the GAC advice over the whole of this new GTLD process has been dealt with, it would be unfair to say that we've done anything other than deal with it in the same way as we deal with everything else, which is to say what we're going to do and move forwards. I don't think that, I think we have actually been stronger often with the GAC than other people have expected us to be and said, no, we're not doing that, and here's why. So I just wanted to get that out on the table because I think there's a tendency, and it's not you, it's all of us, there's a tendency to have one thing happen and then conflate that into it. There's a big problem here because you're being too deferential. So I don't think that's right. But I do accept that there are issues, not necessarily specifically in respect to two letters, although it applies to that, that there are issues where international law and local law maybe have a tendency to get mixed up. And I do accept that there has been a movement towards fragmentation of the way that the GAC operates. In other words, when we go to sit with the GAC, for example, we listen to questions and comments from individual GAC members, and sometimes it's not clear to us whether that's a question or comment that's actually a GAC position or whether it's an individual government position. And that's a distinction I think we need to start clearly making, which is that, you know, GAC advice is GAC advice, but individual government's views are just their own views. But on the two-letter stuff, the conversations are happening and expect more information. Thanks.
Thanks, Chris. Brian, did you want to say any more? Does anyone else want to come in and add to the thoughts or issues around this?
Chris, I just want to thank you for that. I think that is very helpful, and I don't think that we meant to necessarily imply that the board was being overly deferent to the GAC. We are just watching things move forward, and I think the fragmentation issue that you pointed out is exactly one of the issues that we think is something that we want to keep an eye on and making sure that when you're hearing from the GAC, right, is it advice, capital A, or is it an individual government? And so I think that's helpful to say that the board is paying attention and noting that.
Thank you, Jonathan. Apologies, Chris, I can't look at you and speak into the thing at the same time. Can I follow up with that? I think it would be helpful if we can identify tangible steps that we can take. I think we can all agree that that distinction, it's important to get that distinction right between capital A and lowercase a. To say that is one thing, and I think it's a good thing that we all agree on that, but how do we go about doing it? What can we actually do to start working towards that better understanding? Is there something tangible that we as the GNSO Council can do, working with the broader community, that you and the board, I mean, how do we do this? Because it's important, as you say, it is something that we have to get right, and the sooner we can get it right, the better. Thank you.
It's a fair question. It does not have a crisp, clean, definitive, you know, do this and you'll be there kind of answer. We're in a, as I indicated before, we're now at a very interesting point in time, I think, overall, in that we now have a lot of experience accumulated, and we're still in a growth stage with respect to maturity and getting these more complex things settled. So I think the answer is working the issues one at a time, getting experience, and each of our organizations, the GNSO, the board, the GAC, and all the other SOs and ACs and constituencies and so forth, each one is going through what I view as kind of a maturation process built on experience of what works and what doesn't work, of getting sort of more sophisticated in our and poised in our activity. So I would say interact with the GAC on these things and keep raising these questions in a common sense way. Are these individual GAC members raising specific questions that are of interest to them, or are these GAC consensus kinds of things? And have the GAC, encourage the GAC to grapple with that and pose it as a problem, that the fact that they don't have a clean answer to that poses a problem to you, which it does. And there you now have a full agenda for your liaison. Yeah.
Heather, come back. If you could, I just want to make sure we catch anyone else. If you could either make sure you raise your hand or turn your card sideways in, so that if anyone does want to speak, we do pay you the right attention. Heather?
Thank you, Jonathan. Just a quick reply, Steve, if I may. It would be very helpful, I think, to the community, to the extent, taking on board all of your comments in terms of what we can do as the GNSO Council working with the GAC. It would be helpful if we could see in board decisions more explanation. It is interesting to hear that this is an issue that you're grappling with, but that issue is not, or the fact of that grappling is not being communicated in board decisions. And in terms of transparency and accountability, in terms of your decision-making processes, and I maybe am misinterpreting Brian's question, but I think that was the heart of our question, is how do you go about making your decisions? And to the extent that you're struggling to make decisions because you're having, for example, a problem differentiating lowercase a from uppercase A advice, it would be very helpful for us as a community to know that, to know what's behind your decision-making. Thank you.
Yes, and I completely agree with you about sort of visibility into the board processes. Let me just take the opportunity to say two things about that. When I stepped into the role of chair, I had observed some things that I thought were not working best in the way the board operated. We got into late-night drafting sessions, and we tried to hustle things through and so forth. And so I worked very hard to strip away from the board activity as much as possible, happening in that mode, and make it all as orderly as possible. An unintended consequence, or one that I didn't foresee, is that the outcome of that made the board look like it was pro forma, because things were relatively well baked by the time they came to us. The other is that in the particular case we're talking about, where we're thrashing things out in the new GTLD program committee, which is necessarily closed because there are conflict of interest issues that we're very careful about, and so that poses a challenge that I think we have not risen to properly, of how do we document the essence of all of that. And I take that as a serious kind of thing. So there's, when I referred to a learning process or a growth process that we're all involved in, it applies equally to the board, and this is certainly an area that we want to improve on. It's not that we are deliberately trying to be cagey about it or something. It's just how do you build the processes so that they're very smooth and provide the information. Yeah.
Any other comments or thoughts or questions on this? David, go ahead.
Just wanted to mention that one of the things, part of a response to how can we help, I guess, but one of the initiatives that we have been discussing and that we hope to do in the next month or two is that we will issue a council response to the GAC communique in the form of a letter to the board. This was from a suggestion that Bruce Tonkin made in LA, I think was the origin of this suggestion. And the idea is simply so that when the board has to sort of look at issues between the GAC, where the GAC and the GNSO might their interests might overlap, you'll be at least be clearer on the GNSO position, and the GAC is also, we'll be included in that conversation from the start. It will be in the form of unofficial small a advice to the board about what the GNSO believes its position is, which hopefully will inform and get that conversation started a little earlier. So just thought that was worth noting for the board.
Just to say that my quick reaction is this is fantastic. I really hope you help us with that. This would be very, very helpful.
Well, let's hope that the GAC thinks so too, because we're going to discuss. we have discussed it with the informally with the GAC leadership, but we are going to have it on the agenda with the GAC this afternoon. So That's the plan. Any other comments or questions? Just for the sake of good order, I should clarify that there's a sort of, at least with the shorthand that the topics are on the slides, actually the topic we've been discussing, both are sort of GTLD policy and interrelationship with the board, so we've actually been discussing item two, and I apologize, I leapt straight onto item two because I was just reading shorthand off the slides. Shireen?
I mean, still on item two, is just to reassure you that, for example, at the new GTLD committee, one thing we don't want to do is create policy. One thing we don't want to do is create law. We are not capable of doing that, right? I mean, we're not qualified to do that. And frankly, you have no idea how much we debate and discuss GAC advice. To the point that, you know, we're never going to win because the GAC is sometimes unhappy with us. You are sometimes unhappy with us. So we're squeezed in the middle here. But we have to balance a few things. And I think by a very large majority, we don't get into creating policy at all. We don't want to do that. At the same time, we need to get the program going and create some stability and not do any changes to the applicant guidebook. When you get a big A, which is a consensus, under the bylaws you are sort of obliged to address it, and there is a strong presumption also that we're going to accept that GAC advice. But other than that, in general, I've presided over more than 70 new GTLD. I don't think we have come up with policies as numerous as one might think. And that's all I want to say, that trust that we are not in that business. Thank you. But anything that can help us to also not fall into that gap between two things, we will welcome that very much. Thank you.
So it seems we've done well in doing in accidentally mixing the order up of these, because these one and two items are in many ways connected, and in helping you to not fall into that gap, clearly the work of the policy implementation working group is critical, and how we, you know, and bringing in some new tools, mechanisms, and processes. And one of the things we are aware of is that there's a perspective that the plan is to implement the final or to vote on and support the final report from that working group. And if those are indeed, if we do support that final report on Wednesday, it's something where we would like the board to pick up on this in very short order and consider implementing the outcomes of that themselves. So I think, Chuck, are you willing to talk to this a little bit? Chuck has been one of the co-chairs, and Chuck, it would be good to call out who are the chairs and make a couple of remarks on that. So over to you.
Sure. Thanks, Jonathan, and thanks to all of you here. Jay Scott Evans was co-chair with me on the Policy and Implementation Working Group. And let me say, that group, it's not a PDP working group, okay, just to clarify. But we made some very specific recommendations in that group. Now, in addition to the two co-chairs, we had two vice chairs, Michael Graham, who's not able to be with us at this meeting, but Olivier Kwame, and I don't know if Olivier's here or not, from Africa, was another co-chair, and this happens to be his first meeting in person, so it was good he could join us as we hopefully wrap up our work. I'll be very brief. You'll be able to see the recommendations, but one of the recommendations we make is that the GNSO Council and the board approve the recommendations, or in particular, approve the principles and requirements that we recommend. In a minute, I'll just mention elements of three of those to give you an idea. But we think those are the foundation of dealing with the issues that we've handled in the past, especially with the new GTLD program and what's policy, what's implementation, and so forth. And I'll let you judge that on your own. But we also recommended three new processes to serve as tools different from the tools we have right now in the GNSO. One of them is a GNSO input process. It's a very informal process that would define procedures for how to just give input. For example, like the public comment period, if the GNSO wanted to respond to something. Doesn't have any binding effect on any parties, but it's a specific process instead of using an ad hoc process like the GNSO has had to do many times in the past. A second process is the GNSO guidance process. And this one, when you look at the details, actually talks about a process that isn't binding on contracted parties like a PDP, but is binding on for board consideration. And let me clarify that. We're not saying we can't tell you what to do. We're not trying to do that. But it would require board consideration, and if the board doesn't accept it, they would need a two-thirds majority to not accept the guidance that's given. Not policy. Okay, very important distinction. The third process, something we've all talked about for years, is an expedited PDP process. Now, that's not just to get PDPs done quickly. In fact, that wouldn't even be allowed. But it's in cases where you already have well-defined issues, fairly narrow scope, and you don't need an issues report. It's already been defined. You don't need a comment period on the issues report. But it would be somewhat faster than a full PDP. All of us know we've had situations for needs of those, and so that's in there as well. Let me just give you two elements of the principles, because I think these are important. Because we've all had the debate, what's policy, what's implementation, who's responsible for what. Here's part of one principle. Implementation should be regarded as an integral and continuing part of the process rather than an administrative follow-up. Nothing revolutionary, but we think that's fundamental to policy and implementation. And an element of a second one is this. Policy and implementation are not two separate phases entirely, but require continuous dialogue and communication between those that develop the policy and those that are charged with operationalizing and implementing it. Those, I think, sum up the genesis of the principles that are in there. There are a lot more principles and requirements that are recommended. Like Jonathan said, certainly the Policy and Implementation Working Group would not only appreciate quick council action on this, but quick board action on this, because we think it really has advantages, including the new processes, to a lot of the things that we're doing right now. And my last comment is this. It was a great working group to co-chair. And super staff support. So it was just a complete team effort that was a joy to help lead, and I compliment all those that contributed.
Yeah, so thanks, Chuck. That's very, very helpful. And so, Shireen, in terms of your rock and a hard place that you described earlier, I hope you'll see that this is clearly, and you'll recognize many of those issues that we've had to try and deal with through the implementation of the new GTLD program. And this is a constructive and thorough effort to attempt to remedy some of those past issues, which is why we are so keen for the GNSO Council to give it the consideration it deserves, and thereafter the board. Ray?
Thank you, Jonathan. Chuck, if you could. First of all, my experience has been that any working group that you're on is a great working group, and anyone that you're maybe a chair or co-chair of has got to be an outstanding one. So thank you there. The three processes you described, I fully support them. I think that they're long overdue. The One that is most overdue is the expeditious process, because that has to exist. There has to be some mechanism by which the board and the GNSO can deal with rapidly changing environments or technologies or whatever the circumstance may be. And so I look forward to looking at the details of that process. I fully support every single one of them as you described them. Of course, maybe there may be a little bit of devil in the details, but maybe we could talk about that. I am curious, though, when you started out, you said the three different processes. So are these processes in addition to something, or are they throwing out other processes and actually putting some new order in place?
Thanks, Ray. We're not replacing anything, any processes. Essentially, the one process that we have for policy development is the PDP. Okay, so these three are in addition to that. The input process and the guidance process are not policy development processes. They don't result in policies that would be required for registries and registrars to implement. The expedited PDP is a somewhat abbreviated version of the PDP, but PDP procedures still come into play. It eliminates some of the steps at the beginning because a lot of the parameters are already defined.
Thank you, Chuck. Yeah, I fully appreciate that in terms of going back to my years of experience with Aaron. We instituted that very early on, like about the year 2000. And so very familiar with how effective that can be when it has to be used. And so the two other processes, though, I guess are implementation or related to step 10 of the PDP. Is that correct?
I'm sorry. Ask that again, please. I didn't catch. Say it again.
Step 10 of the PDP talks about implementation.
They don't necessarily have to relate to implementation. For example, if the GNSO wanted to submit a comment on the budget or a comment on the strategic plan, they could use an input process, for example, to develop.
I see where you're going there. So why don't we carry on this conversation?
Be happy to.
Perhaps in our joint office.
Okay, thanks.
But by all means, do continue that outside. But it's clear that, for example, we were asked during the course of the execution of the new GTLD program to provide guidance at times. And we didn't have a mechanism in place. So we fumbled and we did made best efforts, but this seeks to address that issue plus the input plus the expedited PDP. Any other questions, comments, issues arising? Any thoughts?
Yes, thanks.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on to the third point then, which is something, again, connected with how and whether policy-related matters are implemented at a staff or board level. And I think Philip Corwin's going to introduce this topic. So over to you, Phil.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. Philip Corwin on the council representing the business constituency. The issue I'm going to bring up is a critically important issue. It's much bigger than the issue it's being focused on. Because we're going through this transition. The whole point of the transition and everything that's led up to it is to preserve the multi-stakeholder model. And the heart of the multi-stakeholder model is that policy is reached by the stakeholders. It comes from the bottom up. It's created by the stakeholders. And then when they reach consensus policy, then it becomes enforceable against all the contracted parties. That is the heart of the model, and the heart of the role of the council is to initiate policy change and new policies where all the stakeholders come together with their different perspectives and different interests and work out consensus, and that becomes the consensus policy if they can reach consensus. So this is a major issue, much bigger than the particular incident that's bringing it up. by way of very brief background on this, this relates to the incorporation of a new TLD RPM rights protection mechanism in a legacy, several legacy TLDs by new proposed renewal contracts. We had a lively discussion with the GDD staff this morning. This is an issue on which there's strong concern among several constituencies and stakeholder groups within the council, not unanimous. But when the rights protection mechanisms for the new TLDs were created, they were created as implementation details for a general intellectual property protection policy. And during their creation, many of us have similar recollections. We came and some were members of the teams that created them, some were interacting. But the question was raised by adopting these for new TLDs, are they going to automatically be applicable to the legacy TLDs? And the answer that many of us thought we got at the time from the members of those teams that created them and from the staff presiding over the creation of the applicant guidebook was no, that would take a PDP to become consensus policy. The other key piece here is that I think it was back around in 2011, there was some discussion within the community whether there should be a PDP to review the UDRP, which is the only consensus policy that's never gone through any review since its creation back in 1998. And there was a decision by this council saying, no, before we consider UDRP reform, we should consider the performance of the new RPMs at the new TLDs and then factor that into any UDRP reform. So this council passed, I believe it was in December 2011, a resolution asking staff to prepare an issues report on the performance of the RPMs 18 months after the first introduction of the first new TLD. That staff report was supposed to be delivered in March, and staff early this year asked for a six-month extension because they didn't have enough data, they felt. There were other analyses going on, and they asked for a six-month extension, which this council granted in January, I believe, and that issues report on the performance of the new RPMs will be delivered in September. So I hope that background wasn't too lengthy, but I thought it's important to understand the context for all this. In May, the proposed renewal agreement for dot travel was issued, and I just want to quote one line from that in the request for public comment, which says, quote, with a view to increase the consistency of registry agreements across all GTLDs, ICANN has proposed that the renewal agreement be based on the approved new GTLD registry agreement as updated on 9th January 2014. So those words, ICANN has proposed, we know the board had no, as far as we know, the board had no discussion of that. We know that there was no consultation by the GDD with the community about whether proposing that as the starting point for contract renewal negotiations was a sound idea. It was decided within the GDD, and there is concern within the business constituents and the other parts of the council that this creation of what looks like de facto consensus policy by individual contract agreement is not consistent with the policy development process laid out in the bylaws. I want to make clear on behalf of the BC, and the BC just filed a letter which went live about 30 minutes ago at the comment forum. This is not about whether uniform rapid suspension. There were two of the RPMs were adopted, the post-delegation dispute resolution procedure and uniform rapid suspension, though URS has got most of the attention. The BC letter makes clear that after receipt of the staff issues report later this year, if there's a PDP on whether the URS should be adopted at legacy TLDs, the BC would probably say yes. The BC also made clear in its comment letter on the new RPMs that it might well support some alterations of the URS and some of the other RPMs in the wake of the experience. So this is not about whether these should be adopted. This is about what is the proper process for adopting it. And since the dot travel renewal agreement was put out for comment, there were two other agreements put out 2 weeks later, dot pro and dot cat, and All of them have exactly the same language. They've all adopted exactly the same RPMs. But the record's clear that in the statement, I can propose that inclusion of those RPMs should be the starting point for contract renewal negotiations, and yet we heard from GDD staff this morning that all three of these registries voluntarily adopted this. But there's a question, would that voluntary adoption have occurred but for staff proposing it as a starting point? So that's the heart of it. Again, it's not about the substance of whether these RPMs should be applicable to legacy top-level domains. It's about whether the manner in which they're being put into legacy TLD renewal contracts is consistent with both the letter and the spirit of the bylaws and of the policy development process prescribed by the bylaws. So I'll stop there, and I hope that set up the discussion well.
Thanks, Philip. That's pretty clear. I've got a hand up. I think it would be great to hear from any board colleagues first. Volker, I know your hand is up as well. Could you just, okay, make one additional point, and then we'll, if the board colleagues could either could make yourself known, so we'll come round to you and have a discussion on this.
Indeed, this is not, Volker Greimann speaking for the record, sorry. This is not a matter of substance. This is a matter of procedure where it is perceived that ICANN staff is taking issues into its own hands where no community mandate exists. There have been numerous examples over the past years. For registrars, the first and foremost has been the introduction of the 2013 RAA into the registry agreements as a requirement to get accredited, where there was no community mandate for such a requirement. There have been various examples in the past. So this is just the most recent example where staff has, without a mandate, pushed for certain issues that would otherwise be policy issues to be introduced into new TLDs, legacy TLDs, or other matters. So that's just a little point I wanted to make on top of that.
Thanks, Volker. Mike?
Thanks, Jonathan. I accept the majority of the comments raised, but I do have an issue going back, unfortunately, right to the beginning of Philip's dissertation, was the question in terms of consensus policy, because that's GNSO consensus policy, not multi-stakeholder consensus policy. And I think that's one of the things that we can't lose sight of, and it goes back to the discussion about giving the GAC too much preeminence or not, and that is that GNSO policy does have impact beyond just contracted parties. And banging the contracted party's drum is entirely valid, and it's certainly something that we need to recognize. But we also do have an obligation to consider other people in this multi-stakeholder environment. And we can't just say a silo has existed, there's a consensus in that silo, and we have then an obligation to ignore everything outside of that silo. And I think you need to recognize that we're walking a difficult tightrope around that. And it would be really useful, and I'm really encouraged by the number of cross-community working groups. I'm really encouraged by the discussion about the GAC liaison, about faster and more direct engagement with other groupings, so it doesn't turn to the board as an arbiter, because really we're a very poor arbiter between different views and different opinions and different requirements. So the ideal situation is one where that mediation is done internally and the board is not thrown an allegedly consensus policy with clamoring happening from all sorts of groups outside of the people who've reached consensus.
I'd just like very briefly respond just to say that, your point is taken, Mike. It was not restricted to the concerns were not restricted to contracted parties, and the GNSO are not contracted parties, obviously. Only, obviously.
Might I respond briefly as well? I certainly didn't mean to imply that the GNSO represents the full breadth of all the stakeholders with ICANN. The GNSO, though, does have the responsibility to create consensus policies for generic top-level domains, and that's what we're talking about. And there's been no input from any other part of ICANN on this staff decision. And when there is a PDP, everyone gets to participate and comment on that, not just GNSO members. And finally, this council has taken very affirmative steps, including the appointment of a liaison to the GAC, who's sitting next to me, to get the GAC more involved in GNSO policy decisions. So we're by no means saying that we ignore the rest of the stakeholders, but there's been no participation by any stakeholders in the decision we're discussing.
And I guess I'd just make one remark, which I hope will be a clarifying remark. I mean, the very concept of consensus policy is by definition something that can only originate within the GNSO and in so being be binding on the contracted parties. So we shouldn't apply that term in this context, although they're broadly generic words. Consensus policy has a very specific meaning, as many of you will know and recognize. Any other comments or questions or points? Heather?
Thank you, Jonathan. Heather Forrest. Just for the avoidance of doubt for board members and those who perhaps haven't seen the comment I posted in the chat, this is a matter on which we had quite lively debate this morning within the GNSO Council, and it is certainly not the case that the views that have been expressed are uniformly held within the GNSO Council. This is not a council view. This is a matter that I think we'll end up discussing at length further. The IPC has filed comments specifically on the dot travel issue, and they don't conform to much of what's been said here this morning, just so that's quite clear. Thank you.
Thanks, Heather. Any other comments or questions in relation to this? Any other thoughts, input? Cyrus?
Thank you. I'm Cyrus Namazi with ICANN staff. Indeed, as Mr. Corbin mentioned, we had a healthy exchange on this topic when the staff visited the council this morning, and I thought we actually resolved it to mutual satisfaction. So the background of it is that we've had, I believe, four TLDs that are not considered new GTLD contracts coming up for renewal. And staff has suggested as a starting point for the contract negotiation the adoption of the new GTLD registry agreement. And the reasons for that are that we believe that the new form actually provides better safeguards for registrants. I mean, that's the whole reason that we renegotiated it to begin with. Operationally, the consistency of the agreement makes it easier for us to operate it and monitor it. And I think last but not least, the fact that the registrants actually have a more consistent set of TLDs to deal with a more consistent set of RPM-related issues is also an added benefit. I think the disconnect here between some of the council members, as Heather mentioned, this was not a unanimous opinion from the council, was the fact that I believe there was a perception that the staff imposed this requirement on the negotiations, which is not true. We just offered it as a starting point, and I believe these four TLDs stepped up to the plate to adopt it, which I think should be commended. And I think that's where the disconnect comes from. I'm not aware of any consensus policy that actually keeps a TLD from adopting a higher level of RPMs for their contracts. Thank you.
Thanks, Cyrus. Any other comments or input or questions? Volker?
Yes, just to respond to Cyrus's comment. I think staff would be better advised to take a more neutral role instead of taking a position that it would be in anybody's best interest to have a certain position implemented to provide a starting point to nudge contracted parties into accepting a certain position. It would be more beneficial to wait for the community to come up with the decision that this is actually something that the community wants. Staff should implement, not make policy. That's at least my position. This is not maybe the position of the entire council, as Heather always pointed out. But this is my position.
Thanks, Volker. Ray?
I wholeheartedly agree with that. That's my position as well. Staff should be neutral, impartial, and objective in all their dealings with the various supporting organizations and advisory councils. And to do anything else puts staff in jeopardy of becoming part of the argument.
At the risk of roiling some waters here, contract between ICANN as a legal entity and the contracted parties puts ICANN in a somewhat competitive position as opposed to a neutral position, in that the issues that are in the contract on the one side represent interests of the contracted parties, and on the other side represent interests of, my goodness, who? Does it represent the interests of the corporation per se? Does it represent the interests of other stakeholders who are not contracted parties to the contract directly? Does it represent general public interest? So it's a somewhat ambiguous situation, and the staff, this is now me speaking not as a coordinated position, but having observed this for a long time, in the case of the contracts with the contracted parties, the staff is acting mostly as a proxy for the real other parties on the other side of this. I mean, there's a small amount or a specific amount in which it's the interest of the corporation per se. How much money are you going to give us? That's a very important thing from a revenue collection point of view and a few other details. But the other aspects are, in effect, acting in lieu of or on behalf of the other parties who are not in the room but who are legitimate parties to this contract, which is the contract with the community about how the registries and registrars are going to operate. I think that there is some legitimate questions about what the processes are that bring all of those forces together. To speak quite frankly, the 2013 RAA reflects a very long history, years, of pressure from law enforcement, among others, for improvements in the quality of who is information. And trying to find the right way to bring those forces together remained a very, very difficult challenge. There was a memorable eruption in a meeting between the board and the GAC in Dakar in 2011, I think. It happened to be the first meeting in which I was chair of the board, although I'd been on the board for a long time. And the GAC took us to task very vigorously, quite vocally, that we had been ineffective in pursuing or unsupportive of the pressure that law enforcement had been pursuing for several years. I was keenly aware of the law enforcement interests and somewhat chagrined that I had been chair for several months by that time, 4 or 5 months, and had not turned my attention to it. Of course, it was also the time in which the previous CEO had announced that he was leaving and that we were in full gear focus on that. But nonetheless, in keeping with trying to stay focused on the ongoing business as well as whatever the immediate issues are, I thought that was very important. And the 2013 RAA, in some sense, is a very late response to what had been going on for a long period of time. Now, the underlying process question is, so where should those forces be brought together and brokered? And we don't have a perfect solution for that. In that room with the GAC taking on the board, a whole law enforcement contingent was sitting there, and the GAC was speaking on their behalf. One of the questions that we had pursued prior to that is whether there should be a law enforcement constituency, perhaps within the GNSO. The GAC was very unhappy about that idea and said, no, they're part of government. We speak for governments. We don't want any part of government to be having a separate constituency. We need them to be focused through us. That's a position. So these things have more complexity than simply, in my view, whether the board, whether the staff is acting solely and only as a neutral party. There is another element, which is inextricably and inescapably marbled in there until we have some other way, if ever, of dealing with all that. So that's a somewhat contrary view, and I debated for a minute or two as to whether to bring that out, but I think these forums are best if we can actually get at the underlying substance and dig into them rather than just at the level of the form.
Thanks, Steve. I know Chris wanted to speak next.
Thanks. Jonathan. So I put my flag up originally to disagree with Steve in an effort to prove to you all that we don't always agree with each other all the time. But ended up kind of agreeing to some extent. But I wanted to come back to the point because I want to take this away and actually, not the specific as such, but the bigger point, and I want to make sure that I understand that I'm clear. What I think I'm hearing is one part of the so it's not about how good the contract is or how bad the contract is at this stage, but I'm going to come back to that in a second. One part of the community saying, of the GNSO saying, the use of that contract is policy, and so therefore the staff shouldn't be doing that. And I suspect that's being said because you don't. There may be an issue with the contract. Another part of the community saying we actually don't feel the same way, and that may be because they actually like the contract. And if the positions were reversed, we'd probably end up with exactly the same position, but with you talking exact opposites. And I want to use that simply as an illustration of just how difficult this is. I get the fact that staff shouldn't be doing policy. I understand that. But the reality is that oftentimes the feedback that we get is not built around the process, and I acknowledge, Phil, that you were very clear that you were talking about the process, so respect for that. But oftentimes the conflicting feedback that we get is actually not about that, but in fact it's around, I like the contract, so I'm fine with what you did. I don't like the contract, so I'm not fine with what you did. So there are two problems that we need to be solving here. One is the process problem, which you've raised, which is what should happen in those circumstances. And the second one is, in the same way that we've been asked about how we look at GAC advice and how we treat GAC advice and what's the difference between capital A GAC advice and advice that we receive from individual GAC members, exactly the same thing applies here, in the sense of we hear all the time that the community feels X, when it's actually quite rare for the community to agree on what X is. So I know I've gone slightly off point, and I did want to acknowledge what you said and say it's important that we have a process. I get that. But I think what the exchange we've just had is indicative of some of the challenges that we all have in trying to operate this multi-stakeholder model. Thanks.
Chris, I would just make one remark, and that is getting above this, a level above this, I think there is my sense, and I'm sure I'll be corrected if my sense is not accurate, but is that over some sustained period of time within the GNSO, and in a way that threads through all of these topics, there is a strong push for this respect for and recognition of due process. And I think we've all got to get behind that and be disciplined about recognizing when that doesn't happen. And that was kind of Phil's overarching point to some extent as well, this model, the post-transition environment. It's about the integrity of the model and our collective mutual confidence in that. So I'm stepping away from this particular issue, but there is an overarching point that I think we are probably, including those that might have issues in this particular example and who might not even want this to be used as an example of such a point, but generally, and so that's the kind of stake in the sand that we've got to be guided
by. If I wasn't
by.
Clear, I completely agree with that. 100%, you're absolutely right, and that's why I said I wanted to take it away, because I think we need to try and work out how to make that happen.
Good, thank you. Any other comments or points in and around this topic? So Stephanie, go ahead.
Thank you very much, Stephanie Perrin, for the record. Just that very simple point, that if we explicitly recognize that a contract is a policy instrument and that the policy should reflect the multi-stakeholder community and that we want to avoid the position where staff are in a push-me-pull-you kind of situation with various stakeholders being happy one time and not happy the other, as Chris has described, then we need probably more work, and I hope it doesn't involve more work landing on GNSO, on how to make sure that that policy instrument, there's a straight line between the policy development process and that nothing gets sort of added in or pushed in
to an ICANN contract at the end. What the parties do is really their own business. What ICANN puts in a contract is everybody's business. Thank you.
Okay, so there's a follow-up hand from Avri.
Thank you. Avri Doria speaking. I think the issue comes down to very often the interpretation of policy becomes policymaking. And so very often we find ourselves where staff is saying, but it's just implementation, when what they're doing is interpreting the policy and they've got a difference even among themselves. Or anytime they see that difference, they need to come back. That they can't make a policy determination. And I think that that's the point that, and it's one that has been repeated over the years, I feel like I and others are constantly sort of repeating this thing, is you cannot interpret policy without actually making policy. And that bit of awareness and that sensitivity to come back and check, is this an issue and how do we deal with it, is the piece that's essentially missing. Thanks.
Ray?
Avri, I agree with you 100%. But it also puts the onus on the people that are putting together the policy language to make sure that the language is so clear and complete that it can only have one possible interpretation. Because when it doesn't have that one interpretation, then the situation you're describing will occur. So in the negotiations between the various members of the policy forum, they have to make sure that in the end, the language that is agreed to is commonly understood. And so, and I also agree that if the staff does not necessarily understand or has trouble in terms of really trying to perceive what was intended, and that's really what the perception comes from, is what's intended, that there does need to be a dialogue that has to exist so that you can get to the common understanding.
If I may? Yeah, I agree with you. And it is something that we have learned from the years when, you know, the original new GTLD policy came out, when there was more of there was a dialogue and there was a feeling that there was understanding, but a much looser thing, to the realization we have now that no, you know, every T needs to be dotted and every I needs to be crossed before things are passed. But still, there'll never be a perfect bit of writing that can't be interpreted in a way that was not imagined, was not fathomed at the time of the writing. So there needs to be a coming back no matter how much deed. But you're right. Now, of course, that'll mean for longer policy processes while we are doing the dotting and the crossing to make sure, and the analysis and such. But you're absolutely right that at this point the policies have to be several layers deep to make sure that those implementation details that are policy reliant are indeed covered.
Okay, thanks. Thank you very much. So, Ray?
Yeah, real quick, that's where this expeditious process becomes more important, because if you get a policy that gets mired in discussion and something has to be done, it's better to have an expeditious process to do that than to let somebody like the board say, well, we got to do something. What are we going to do when they pick something? Yeah.
Thank you. I think we dealt with these topics well. We've gone through them. It's been reasonably interactive and a thorough discussion, so thank you very much. I think that the AOB, we're not going to touch on. I think they're relatively clear in writing, and especially in the way they were sent to you in full form, if this isn't the full form, and just some thoughts to think about. One question we had for Fadi, and you may want to respond to this in our remaining 5 minutes, any of you feel free to do so, was how could we be more effective in our interaction with the CEO and or the board? And if you, I mean, you know, this is what we've done. We've told you we've done a whole lot of work to try and do our existing policy work, to try and improve the way in which we work, and to engage you on areas of concern. Is there anything else that any of you think we could or should be doing differently, or you would like to see otherwise from your policy-making body. Steve.
So this is a somewhat small but very specific thing that comes out of our recent interactions related to the auction proceeds. We have a really excellent kind of newly exercised process of cross-constituency working groups. I think that's an excellent piece of machinery because it goes to the heart of an issue and cuts across a lot of activities. The natural process for starting all of this up is to reach out to the other SOs and ACs. I'm sure it's completely unintended, but the board actually would like to be included in this because not that we want to control it, but we have a role to play, often just a supporting role, to facilitate or to anticipate or to provide inputs to the process. So to the mechanical form of your question, you know, the interpretation of your question, what can you do that would be more helpful is in a kind of a, I don't want to trivialize this or make it sound silly, but treat the board as a peer and include rather than as something to be held outside and that we're in some degree of tension. And that will just facilitate communication. It's not a, it doesn't change the formal aspects, doesn't shift any power or anything, but it will, I think, avoid some confusion and speed things up over a period of time.
Thanks, Steve. That's a good suggestion, and we'll take it on board. Any other comments or questions in and around from the board perspective, how and whether the GNSO could do anything different? All right, let's call it a wrap at that stage, unless anyone's got a last point they'd like to make. Great. Let's thank you very much from